Secretary General, welcome to In Conversation.
It's an enormous pleasure to be with you.
Secretary General, what would you say to the people of Myanmar to reassure them that the international community is behind them?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say to the military of Myanmar that they need to immediately release the prisoners. They need to immediately recognize the result of the elections. They need to immediately put in place again their constitutional order. The constitution of Myanmar is not perfect. It's a constitution that gives the military enormous power, but at least that constitution should be respected. And what I can say to the people of Myanmar is that we will be doing everything we can in order to make the international community be aware of the dramas faced by the people of Myanmar and to do everything possible from ASEAN to the Security Council of the United Nations and to the different other international fora to support what needs to happen is a return to the constitutional order, is a return to democracy, is respect of the will of the people expressed in the elections.
Do you support then peaceful resistance, peaceful civil demonstration?
We are against violence. We believe that violence is not a solution in any circumstance. And so, naturally, when people want to express their rejection of something that has happened politically, we believe it should be done through peaceful resistance. I mean, I always had an enormous admiration for Mahatma Gandhi. I think he is a symbol. All the positive values of our world. And so I would strongly recommend the people of Myanmar to express their grievances, but to do so in a peaceful way.
And the doctors saying that they are going to stay home to express their grievances and dismay over what's happened, do you support that?
A basic human right is the right, is the freedom of expression. A basic human right is the right of demonstration, of association. These are basic human rights that need to be respected. And I ask, of course, the military to not to have any violence in relation to the people of Myanmar that is expressing their feelings in a peaceful way. As I said, it's very important that everything being done in a peaceful way.
If you had the military chief of Myanmar, Min Aung Hlaing, right in front of you this moment, what would you say to him?
Well, make things go back to what they were before this coup. Coups are not acceptable in our modern world, and the people of Myanmar deserves better.
What about Aung San Suu Kyi? Can you reassure her that she won't have to be under house arrest for another 15 years?
I don't think we can reassure her because I have not the power to guarantee it. I think we can do everything possible to make sure that she is released. And I have to say that there is, I mean, something dramatic in this situation. If we can blame Aung San Suu Kyi of something, was that she was too supportive of the military. The military have conducted, as you know, in North Rakhine State, an operation that led to the ethnic cleansing of the Rohingya population with levels of brutality that were absolutely unacceptable. And we have seen Aung San Suu Kyi defending the military. And we have seen even going to the courts, to international courts, to defend the military. So if there is anything we can blame her, is that she was too close to the military. And so it's, I mean, unimaginable that the military, after everything she has done, that she is arrested and that the result of the elections that in which her party won is not recognized.
The Myanmar military claims that there is election fraud. Would the United Nations help in investigating whether or not these claims are justified?
Well, the United Nations has several different instruments of action, namely through the Human Rights Council, through the Security Council. The Secretary General has not powers of investigation. But of course, I must say that it is, for me, difficult to understand that in a country where the military have so much power, where they have such a huge control of the situation, that there could be a fraud against the parties that they support. It's very difficult to accept.
Secretary General, you spoke of blame. Who is to blame for this situation?
Well, it is clear that in a situation like this, those that are responsible for what was done are the ones that need to assume that responsibility. And this is a coup. Coups are not acceptable in the modern world. And I reject and condemn the coup that was made. And I ask for things to go back to where we were, with full respect of the will of the people expressed in the elections.
Are you unhappy with what the Security Council has now said, because they have stopped short of condemning the coup?
But the Security Council has clearly asked for the release of prisoners and clearly asked for the reestablishment of the constitutional order. And that is the most important thing. And so, in my opinion, and I hope that together with ASEAN, together with other international organizations, it will be possible to make the Myanmarese military understand that this is not the way, that they need to go back to where they were.
When do you think that might happen?
I can only hope.
What message of hope would you give to the Myanmar people?
Well, the Myanmar people has shown an enormous resilience. The Myanmar people has shown an enormous capacity to endure suffering. I mean, if you imagine all the ways of different conflict, all the years of different conflicts, if you imagine natural disasters that have been dramatic in Myanmar, now the COVID, I mean, that resilience of the Myanmarese people is something that I deeply admire. And my appeal is that that resilience should have as a reward the full evolution into a democratic situation and the full pacification of the country and the full integration of all its peoples. If we look at the pandemic and the very big gaps between the rich and poor, China is the only major country that's showing positive growth in 2020 and is probably going to be one of those that will drive the global economy forward in this coming year, in this 2021. Do you think that this is an Asian century, or do you think that this is a China century? I think the Asian countries in general, not only China, have shown more resilience of their economies than other parts of the world. And this is, I hope it will be a positive contribution for the world economy to recover. But now we need to make sure that the vaccines are a global public good, affordable and available everywhere. Many people in the developed countries, in the global north, think that they need to rush to vaccinate all their citizens, because if they vaccinate all their citizens, they will be safe. It's not true. If people only vaccinate rich countries, but the poor countries have no access to the vaccines, and the virus spreads like wildfire in the global south, we have seen that the more the virus spreads, the more the virus mutates. And when it mutates, it can become not only more transmissible, as we already see in several of the mutations, eventually more deadly, and possibly more resistant to vaccines. So those that vaccinate all their population but forget to support the other populations of the world might receive back a virus for which their vaccines are no longer effective. The only way to protect everybody is to protect everybody everywhere, and to make sure that vaccines are a global public good, available and affordable everywhere.
But rich countries are vaccine hoarding. They're buying more vaccines than they need. What can the UN do about this?
I believe that there are three things that are very important. First thing is that the COVAX initiative led by the World Health Organization is fully funded and is able to accelerate their support to the developing countries. The second thing is that those countries that have bought more vaccines than the ones that are needed for their population share those vaccines also with the developing countries and do it as quickly as possible. And the third thing that I believe is very important is for the licenses to produce vaccines to be available. We have huge capacity in countries like India, huge capacities in countries like Brazil, even in South Africa. All vaccines should be open for production in, namely, the developing countries that have a huge capacity to do so in order to multiply the potential distribution and to make sure that we are able to vaccinate as quickly as possible the global population.
You've said that the United Nations climate change goals are part of the pandemic recovery. But how will climate change goals actually put food on the table for people who are now dropping below the poverty line? And how will it get children back into school when there are massive lockdowns?
But it is climate change that is making more people being poor. It's climate change that is affecting much more dramatically the poor and vulnerable people in the world than the rich people in the global north. We all know that a green recovery, if we use the trillions of dollars that are now spent in a green recovery, that will create much more jobs than the brown economy of the past. It is clear that renewable energy creates much more jobs than the fossil fuel energy. And it is clear that it's cheaper. And it's clear that it's better. It's better to fight poverty. So I do believe that there is a convergence. A very active climate action is also a way to reduce inequalities in the world. And we need to defeat at the same time the COVID and climate change, because the COVID itself is also a factor of inequality. Look at the inequality in the vaccines. So when we look at poverty, when we look at inequality, is by adopting the right approaches of inclusivity and sustainability in the recovery that we'll be able to respond to them.
For the world economy to get back on its feet, we need to be able to travel. Do you think that a UN-backed vaccine passport is a good idea?
I think what we need is to have all countries come together and define a certain number of common rules in relation to the opening of their economies and their societies and in relation to traveling and to international contacts. What we have now is an unfortunate situation. Each country adopts its own strategy. Even where I am in the United States, you have different states with different quarantine rules. Now, we would need to have and I have asked the G20 to do so, to have a coordinated approach in which all countries adopt the same rules and in which, whether it is through a passport or through any other mechanism, it is possible to intensify the traveling that is safe. If each country will go on adopting its own measures, different from country to country, we will undermine global trade, we will undermine the global supply chains, and we'll make it more difficult for the global economy to recover.
But you've talked about all of this, and there's not a lot of united in this United Nations. It's been 1 year already of the pandemic. Surely by now, all the things that you're suggesting, Secretary General, people should know, governments should be aware of, they should be talking to each other.
But the drama we have is that our global governance system has no teeth. We have multilateral institutions like the United Nations, but we have not the power. We can propose, we can give orientation. Only the Security Council has some teeth, and as you know, the Security Council is not always very much willing to bite. And so we need to strengthen our multilateral governance system in order to be able to have a stronger influence on how things are effectively done on the ground.
Would a solution be that the really big countries like the US and China take more leadership?
I have no doubt that it would be very important for the G20 as a whole to take leadership on this and to create common strategies and common rules to make sure that everything would move in the right direction. And of course, the two countries with a higher potential are indeed the United States and China. And it's very important to make the relationship between the two a functional relationship. I understand that there are areas in which United States and China are deeply divided, and it is like that. Human rights is an example. They are deeply divided on that, and they will remain so, in my opinion. But there are areas in which I believe they have clearly common interests, like in climate action, everything that is related to trade, everything that is related to technology, and everything that is related to all else are areas in which I believe it is important to have the United States and China and others having a serious negotiation, trying to find common ground and allowing for us to have one only global economy, one only internet, the rule of law prevailing everywhere, and to avoid a divide that, in my opinion, would severely undermine the potential of recovery of the whole economy.
Secretary General, that the United Nations needs to be more pro-China to understand China's point of view more, which is something, at least, that the Chinese analysts argue.
Everybody needs to better understand everybody. And the United Nations as such is an organization where everybody is present. And I think that an effort must be made, especially in the present world, to fully understand the legitimate interests of each country, and understanding the legitimate interests of this country, to find the common ground and the unity that is necessary to face the dramatic challenges we have. We have the COVID and the need to be ready for future pandemics that might be worse than the COVID. We have climate change. We need to defeat climate change. We have high levels of inequality in the world that undermine the cohesion of our societies. We have even the risks of non-proliferation of nuclear weapons to be put into question. So in a world that is fragile, in a world where so many challenges are global, we need to have forms of global cooperation. And eventually in some areas where there are different perspectives and there are confrontations in those areas, but not because of that to undermine what needs to be a common effort to face the dramatic challenges of our time.
In this whole Myanmar crisis, does it mean that we are going to forget the Rohingya and that these hundreds of thousands of people won't be remembered and they won't be able to go home and find somewhere safe to have a decent life?
This is a question that is very dear to my heart. I went to Myanmar many times in the past. I went to North Rakhine State several times. I visited Rohingya communities in Myanmar and in Bangladesh. And I've never seen in the world the people that have suffered so much of discrimination with their rights not being recognized. I think that whatever happens in Myanmar in the near future, Myanmar must create the conditions for the voluntary return in dignity and safety of this community to the country and grant them the rights that allow them to fully integrate in the Myanmarese society. I think that there is no way we can build a community by just discriminating part of that community. We need to make everybody feel that their identities are respected, but at the same time that they are part of the nation as a whole.
Do you think that China should play a larger role in solving this problem?
I think China has been working with Bangladesh and Myanmar, and I think that contribution is very important. But I would urge China to be even more active in this regard, as China is a country with a very important influence in the region, and namely in the countries that I mentioned. And so I consider the role of China as particularly important.
If you were to look at 2021, you said that it was going to be a much more optimistic year, but it hasn't started that way. We've now had a military takeover in Myanmar. There appear to be tensions in the South China Sea, even borders between China and India. Are you sticking to your optimistic prognosis for 2021?
Well, we have a mixed picture. We are seeing in Libya a ceasefire holding, and we are seeing very important negotiations taking place. We see ceasefires, the ceasefires I appealed for, holding in several parts of the world, perfectly or imperfectly, but holding. They are holding in Syria, they are holding in the Ukraine, they are holding in Nagorno-Karabakh, they are holding in Sudan or South Sudan with difficulties, with problems. So not everything is negative, but of course we need to make sure that all the conflicts that you mentioned are effectively addressed, and we need to make sure that defeating the COVID and making 2021 the year of reconciliation between humankind and nature, we also create the conditions for ceasefires to be implemented and for peace negotiations we put in place everywhere.
Secretary General, thank you very much for talking to us today.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure. All the best and good recovery from the COVID. And for those that will be celebrating the Chinese New Year, my congratulations.